I was coming from Montgomery. I had my guitar on my back. When this stranger stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. He was dressed like 1950, half drunk and hollow-eyed. Say it's a long walk to Nashville, would you like to ride? I sat down in the front seat, turned on the radio. Them sad old songs coming out of them speakers was solid country gold. Then I noticed the stranger was ghost white pale when I asked him for a light. I knew there was something strange about this ride. He said, "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you're playing sign? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings? Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride."
Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher, but a very special guest is joining us this week, which is why we're up a little later than usual. Actually, it's ridiculously early on a Sunday morning, but we're glad to be joined by the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion, the exclamation point, Steve Anthony is on the line with us. And Steve, I think that's probably the best place to get started, although we're going to be all over the map during the course of this conversation. Having the opportunity to be the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion, how did the opportunity to wrestle Jushin Thunder Liger come about? And just give us a few thoughts after that about the trip to Japan to defend the belt against Liger.
Well, first off, good morning, guys. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. Jushin Liger. What can I say? No words can describe the feeling of wrestling Jushin Liger. Not to put any age on it, but I can remember watching Jushin Liger when I was younger and being like, I want to be that guy, because to me, he was the first big, other than Muda, the first big Japanese star that made an impact here in the States, just because of the style he wrestled, the cruiserweight style, which, I was very interested in at that time, and then growing up, just evolved more and more. But to wrestle Jushin Liger the first time in Las Vegas was a big deal at the CAC, and actually to win the junior belt. But to go to Japan and actually be in his environment, where he's like Hulk Hogan in Japan, to wrestle him in that environment was just, I get chills just talking about it. It was great. And of course, to come out victorious on that one too is just like, man, wow. It was that moment of like, I've made it. I finally made it. So yeah, there's no words to really describe that.
Speaking of finally making it, you and I go back. What was the first the year that Percy had the seminar at his place? How many years ago has that been, Steve?
Oh wow, God, I've taken too many brain busters. I think I can't remember the exact year, but man, that's
seven,
it's
eight,
been quite
nine
a while.
Years, hadn't it?
Oh, easy, easy. Probably close to 10, 11, because just thinking about it, in 08 is when I moved to Missouri, and it was probably a couple of years before that. So, yeah, it's been quite a while.
Yeah, I first met Steve in Mobile at Percy's thing, and, I saw something there. I mean, there was a lot of people there that night. There must have been 25, 30 kids. And and Steve stuck out to me. I just saw something there. And, the road has not been easy. You've worked your butt off. You've been looked at. You moved up to Missouri and worked with Harley and was one of his trainers for what, a year, and then before you guys moved back to Louisiana, you've had dark matches with WWE. You've been looked at, you've been told you're talented, and yet the call never came. Was that frustrating for you?
Oh, of course it's frustrating. It was just like, they throw the fishing pole out and let me just about to get the bait and then reel it back in. No, it's not time. So yeah, it was really frustrating. I thought I did pretty much everything that I possibly could do, but for some reason it never stuck. I don't know. It's one of those things.
But you never gave up, and when the call came to be the NWA Junior Heavyweight Champion, did you think, well, it's about time, or did you think it was never going to come? Something like that would never happen.
You know, I had my doubts. I was like, you know, yeah, but until that night when we were at the CAC in Vegas and I was actually fixing to go to the ring, that's when it hit me, like, you know, well, it's finally happening, you know. And it's pro wrestling, you know. You can't expect anything, I don't believe, you know. Wrestling doesn't know anybody anything. I mean, if you want to make it, you got to go out and grab it yourself, you know. To quote a popular individual, you got to go and grab the brass ring yourself. So, yeah, to say that I had any thoughts of, like, you know, hey, finally, you know, I'm getting mine. No, it was what it was, really.
You know, we worked a tournament in L.A., and that got you noticed by a few people. And, in fact, from that tournament that we did in L.A., Timothy Thatcher's work has gotten some work with Evolve. You know, some of the guys, well, you've moved up the ladder. Some of the guys, you know, that were there are getting noticed more than, you know, than they had been. And I think, you know, I think Nigel and I feel good because we figure we picked the right guys for the tournament. But, you know, you hold down a full job. You guys, you and your wife have started a family. It can't be getting any easier for you, Steve. It's actually got to be getting tougher, right, to juggle all the balls at the same time.
You know, it kind of does. As far as schedule-wise, I went from once, sometimes twice a weekend, you know, being on the road to sometimes now it's 3 or 4 days. And, yeah, it is tough. My day starts really early at 3:30, I'm up. 4 o'clock, I'm in the gym, cardio session. I do have a full-time job that normally runs from 5:30, 6 in the morning till 4:30, 5:30 in the afternoon, and it's another gym session. And then, you know, I have a beautiful wife and two great kids, you know, so it's hard to find time for every little detail in my life, but, hey, I'm making it work.
You know, that actually brings me to a question I'd like to jump in on here real quick with respect to how the schedule has changed. So now there's obviously a lot more going on. You're traveling a lot more. You're working a lot more frequently defending the World Junior Heavyweight Championship. And you've had to clearly make some adjustments in your schedule. What's been the biggest asset? What are the things that you've had to do to rearrange and just make the time that's necessary to do everything that needs done?
Actually, taking a little bit more time from my normal job has been probably one of the hardest things, you know, to juggle that. But, you know, traveling, I do a lot of traveling on my own, which I still do when I'm flying and by myself. But now, you know, I'll try to drive a little bit more just so I can pack up the family and spend a little bit more time with them. So those two things have probably been the biggest adjustment.
Les, I want to ask you a question, actually, about Steve before we continue on here, because you mentioned at the top of the show how the very first time you saw him, you knew that there was something there. And you were the one who told me about him before I saw the DVDs for the tournament. And he absolutely opened my eyes about him, because before that, Steve, I had never seen you work. And so, Les, a lot of things, as you mentioned, have gone on and good things have happened for a lot of guys that you ended up putting in the tournament. But what was it exactly about Steve that when you were putting the lineup together for that tournament, you said, we got to have this guy?
He could wrestle. He just didn't do spots. He looked like an athlete, looked like a professional wrestler. He paid his dues in the weight room. He he had that, you know, the fundamental foundation, which so many kids today are, you know, they learn to do a moonsault or a 450 splice before, no offense, Stephen, before they ever, you know, learn to do a top wrist lock or a headlock, for Christ's sake. And that's where they spend their time. It's more like entertaining themselves. And with Steve, it was just a different ball game. It was, and that was the kind of guys that we try to put in the tournament that, you know, that we saw were fundamentally sound because, you know, we adhered more to the rules than any of the current, big companies do, you know, because it was break on 4 or 5 is a disqualification. Do not touch the referees, not part of your shtick. and you needed to go out there and work some holes, and it wasn't about dive through the ropes or stuff like that. So, you know, he fit the criteria. And the hell of it is, in this day and age, the guys that fit that particular criteria are harder to find than they ever were before. And I think part of that, I think he's got, you know, both of us got to give a little credit to John Saxon, who, did John start you, Steve, or who did you start with?
No, originally I started with a guy, Stan Nockham, who was trained by Boris Malenko out of Florida, and got a good base under me. And then from there, Bob and Scott Armstrong kind of took me in and helped me out a lot. So yeah, John, I just met through the years of, you know, being in business. He came into the area I was in, and, which hell, probably 15, 16 years ago, you know, so I've been around John for quite some time.
And John is just old school. He's, and he demands good fundamentals and good sound basics. And you know, Steve had all those particular things. And I think that's, I was just thinking too, probably, I don't know if it was the highlight of the tournament for Steve or for anybody else, but in the opening round, he worked with Caprice Coleman, and we were in this ballroom in downtown L.A., and Caprice had been out, they had been out on the floor a little bit, and Steve went to slingshot Caprice. You could see, this is actually on the first round of DVDs, slingshot Caprice in, and Caprice got so high coming over the top that he kicked the chandelier and knocked a lot of the little doodads that hang on the chandelier. These guys had a shower coming down on their head in the middle of the match.
Yeah. I still have a piece to that. And I know he does as well. We kind of took a souvenir home that night.
Steve, tell me a little bit about working that tournament, your experiences with the different guys that you had a chance to get in the ring with, and just the overall feel of getting out there and being – was that your first time working on the West Coast?
Actually, yes, it was. Great experience. You know, L.A. was a fun town. You know, Les and Nigel and also David, you know, David was a part of it too, put together probably, for sure, one of the best tournaments I've ever been in. Just the concept was so unique and challenging, really. You know, I mean, you're talking 10-minute match, kind of Iron Man style, as many pinfalls, submissions, or countouts, whatever it was that you can get in 10 minutes. It pushed you. It tested you, you know, as far as wrestling skills, win-wise. It was just great. And the guys that they put together, wow. You know, I mean, you're talking about former All-Elite World Champion Adam Cole, who was a guy that I actually went out to in the semifinal round. Johnny Gargano, Papa Don, Timothy Thatcher, Olympia, just so many great guys, different styles, but, you know, it was just like, wow. When I first saw the A and B brackets for the tournament, you know, I was overwhelmed. I was like, man, am I really good enough to stand in the ring with some of these guys? And, hell, we found out I made it all the way to the semifinals, which was just a great accomplishment. But so many good matches that came out of that tournament. You know, me and Kyle Matthews is one of my favorites, actually. Just, I don't know, the crowd involvement was just so great in it, and I don't know, it just clicked. It really did.
These guys, you know, we had the great part about it was there was no egos in the locker room. We had all these great guys, you know, everybody working together. It was, you know, I said, if this is the last thing I do in this business, I'm going out on a high note, because, I mean, it put the fun back in it for me too, because these guys were, and the thing about the tournament, the way it was put together, is these guys, rubbed their hands together and said, hey, we can get creative with this, because it's about scoring, you know, X number of falls. And we always, everybody tried to work their finishes and stuff, you know, to where it was a surprise to the people watching. And for the most part, it was. And, you know, I don't know that anybody ever figured out, you know, what the finals of this thing was going to be or who was actually going to win it. But it was as much fun for me as it was for the young guys. And Christ, I'd love to do something like that every year, but it's just not in the cards.
Yeah, definitely. You know, me and Wardell Walker were just talking about that, how great that was and the good times we had. But yeah, you know, there was so many different guys, and some guys had really been established at that point, but nobody had an attitude in the locker room. Nobody. Everybody was working for that night, you know, that show to make everything click and go well. It was great, and hats off to Nigel. Wow. I knew how good Nigel was in the ring from watching, but just to be back there and listen to him and get ideas from him, it's sad that he's not still in the ring. It really is.
Yeah, it was one big happy family. I don't know how to say it any different than that. I mean, you know.
No, exactly. That's exactly how I would describe it.
Yeah, we got together in the hotel lounge on Friday nights when everybody came in. And we sat there until God knows.
And watched salsa dancing.
watched salsa dancing. And then we got together on Saturday night after the show. And it was just, a coming together of the clan, I guess. I don't know. But all these guys were very talented. Hell, I'd love to have that whole locker room, you know, as a full time roster, man. Oh wow,
you know, I'm sorry, but I was going to tell you, next to winning the NWA Junior title and facing Liger, that was probably one of the greatest times in my career. Was that whole tournament, man? It was just, well, you guys did a hell of a job with that. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, my friend. You know, are you traveling places you haven't? I mean, you've been to Japan before, right?
Yes. When I was with Harley, I'd done some tours for Pro Wrestler Noah. So I kind of wet my feet in Japan once before.
Have you been places this time since you've got the NWA title now that you haven't been in the past? I mean, you're getting to see some parts of this country that you haven't been to before.
Yeah, definitely. You know, some different areas in Tennessee I've never been to. As a matter of fact, just last weekend I was in Dyersburg, Tennessee, which is probably about an hour north of Memphis, and had a really good match against Sonata, which is, he was a young boy for Great Muda trained, and very, very good. You'll see a lot of him. I don't know if you've seen any of him. He was in TNA as the X Division champion for a while, but you know, I think he's gonna make a big buzz here in the States pretty soon.
You know, I remember, I'll tell you a funny story about Dyersburg. When I worked for the national office, that's where most of the Welshes came from originally, was Dyersburg. Roy and Herb and Lester and the whole family, yeah. But Herb ran, I don't even know what the building was initially, you know, before he got his hands on it. But the ceiling was so low that what they had done is they'd cut a square out of the roof, the outside perimeter of a wrestling ring, and then raised it, just, you know, put a new roof on in the middle, just, you know, above the ring. But I remember as the baby faces, we dressed in an old frozen food locker that obviously wasn't, you know, turned on anymore. But the coolest thing was that there was this old black gentleman that sat in the lobby of this place with a piano, and he played old honky tonk piano right up mm-hmm. until the matches started, and then he'd play really? During intermission. But I remember the first time we went in there, and I said, "What is this? Where we're dressing?" He said, "It's a frozen food locker." And I'm thinking, "Christ, can we get out once we get in?" I don't know.
Wow.
But that's my remembrances of Dyersburg. Of course, Dyersburg, I'm sure, has grown to be a much larger city since then. But that was my first look at Dyersburg, Tennessee.
So you know the area. Wow.
Yes.
It's crazy. You know, Jim Cornette was on that same show, and the building had some AC issues they were working on, so it was pretty hot. And I really popped because home of Louisiana, I'm well connected to, and Cornette screams, "Well, man, we just as soon as dress outside like we used to in home of Louisiana," And he just started with stories, and I was just like, wow, you know, because I can remember Mid-South Wrestling coming through this area, and it's just weird to hear guys just talk about different towns. And, you know, I'm listening to you talking about Dyersburg, thinking about that. It's just like, man, you know, wrestling roots.
So you grew up watching Mid-South Wrestling. Who were some of the guys that you what were some of the angles or the wrestlers that you remember most that really got you into it?
Oh, man. Of course, you know, for some reason, I guess I was meant to be a junior because I always leaned toward the smaller guys. But Mid-South, I would say sticking out would be the Expresses, you know, Midnights versus Rock and Roll. Was one of the big angles. Then you know, you had Magnum TA versus Wrestling 2 when they did the whole deal, the student and the teacher thing, and then that whole thing blew up. You know, Junkyard Dog stuff. Those were the guys, you know, Ted DiBiase just really, you know, made me want to be a part of wrestling. And, you know, it was Mid-South, and I also was a really big NWA fan. At the time, WWF just, I don't know, there was something different. And back then, I didn't know what it was, but, you know, it didn't appeal to me as much. And, you know, not to really knock the product, but it always seemed like that cartoonish thing. And I don't know, I just liked the realism of Mid-South and the NWA and what they were putting out at the time.
Well, of course, with the Watts and the Bookers that they had there, they ran some hellacious angles. I mean, you know, we talk now about the audience not being emotionally connected as much as they used to be. But my gosh, back then, you were emotionally connected. I mean, when they shot a hot angle, you got your head into it right away, I'm sure, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I was just thinking as you was talking, the angles they ran was just so great, and you got emotionally connected because of the match. Nothing against the way things go today, because I've had to change my style and do things to fit in. You know, if you want to stay in a wrestling business, you have to evolve with it, you know, and you got to go with it no matter if you agree with it or not. But the things they did in the ring got you. They didn't, you know, you wasn't evolved because somebody hit the ropes, you know, dusted off their shoulder, waved their hand in front of their face, and then dropped a punch. You know, now those things, it seems like the crowd are looking for more than the actual moves and what's going on in the ring. You know, unless I can remember so many times you would get on guys like, you know, you just got the hell kicked out of you. Now you're starting to fight back, and you're going to look at the people and ask them if it's okay. What the hell is wrong with you? You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I, you know, there's always been show business. And the business has always been, you know, part show biz. But I think now some of the kids with bad instruction and everything, that's all they know. And they just take that too far, and they rely on that. And,
right.
You know, and I think that's actually what's hurting the business, you know, more than anything else. Well, you know, let me ask you a question, Steve. You know, Vic and I have talked about it. Jim Ross went off on his blog a couple weeks ago. Heyman and Steve Austin were talking about it on a podcast. A lot of the guys bring it up, is this, if you kick out of every finisher, then what's left to win a match with? I made the statement last week, and Bobby Eaton watching Kevin Owens and John Cena in their second match that they had, he turned to Brian Thompson, his buddy, and said, well, I guess they need to get a machine gun to finish this thing off. Meaning that, you know, if nobody's finisher is worth a damn, where do you go from there? And I think the young guys are hurting themselves by killing off finishes like that. But, you know, they don't seem to care.
And you know, it's true. And in a sense, I'm guilty of it too. For some reason, and I really don't know why, we've become the era of big false finishes, you know. And honestly, it's probably letting the wrong people control the matches, and you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Sure.
I can remember having a conversation, this was years ago, with Sherry Martel, and, you know, she said it's going to come to the point one day where the finish for wrestling is going to have to be death, you know, because
yes.
just, and, you know, she, in a sense, she's right. And I just heard the same comment that you just said about Bobby Eaton. Somebody else told me the same thing, but it is, you know, I don't know. I can't even describe it and why it's went to where it's went. Only the thing I can say is because the wrong people, you know, they're letting the fans, in a sense, kind of control what they do. And you know, it's not right. You know, it's not.
Yeah. I think they got to draw back a little bit and tighten things up. Well, you know, now where you're part of the country in this, well, the Southeast, pretty much, it's not a throwback, but you can sell wrestling, as I knew it, or as you know, when you first became a fan, you can go back to that and get a solid reaction from people in that part of the country where there are other places that they don't even understand it. And all they're about is the cheap pop, really.
Exactly. You know, and my hat's off to him because I just talked to somebody the other day and they said Davey Richards actually made the comment and everybody knew for a long time Davey was a staple in ROH and kind of wrestled that style. But he passed a comment that he was having so much fun, you know, because he was now traveling down to the South and he's like, it's wrestling fans. It's not guys looking for a cheap pop, you know, and he was really happy at what he was doing now. But yeah, you can, here in the South, you can still wrestle and, you know, go out and tell a good story, have a good match and get the people involved. Whereas, you know yourself as well as I do, if I take that style of match to the East Coast, more than likely they probably sit on their hands or, you know, boo the hell out of me out of the building. It's just, I don't know, that whole Philadelphia Northeast area, they like a different style.
Well, you know, I think the country has always been, you know, that, I mean, I remember when Roger Kirby and I first came into Louisiana back in 66, for Lee Fields. I remember Ken Lucas saying, you know, now you can't wrestle your comebacks here. These people aren't buying that. You've got, you know,
nope.
you got to be the fight fire with fire. When you come back with
exactly.
these heels here, you got to come back just the same way, you know, they were getting heat on you. So, yeah,
and
so it changes, you know, with the people too. But, you know, I believe, you know, the worst thing is, Vic, with Steve is a throwback to a certain degree. I mean, he's, you know, he's young and he's modern, but the guys who can still, you know, wrestle in different styles have that kind of versatility, I think to me are more valuable because of that very thing. Because we were talking about earlier about him, you know, he's going to be going for NWA Smoky Mountain in September. And those people are going to buy wrestling a lot more than somebody in New Jersey or New York who's more in, you know, into seeing a spot fest. So,
right.
You know, the guys that are versatile actually have more staying power, I think.
With that versatility, actually, what I was thinking of while you guys were talking about that is the, again, something that we like to go back to a lot, or you do often on the show, Les, is the importance of laying that good foundation. Because as you guys mentioned, there are different areas and different styles play better in different areas. And if you don't have that solid foundation, maybe you can go someplace and do a million moves and get over. But if you're booked, say, for example, down south, like you guys are talking about, where you can still wrestle and that's really what the preferred style is, if you go down there without that foundation and do your match because you only have one match, you're going to have some trouble.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, you know, something yesterday, when we were training yesterday morning, Tarek and BJ Whitmer were in helping out. They've been giving me a hand for a while now. But Yeah, but I know one of the things it wasn't yesterday. It wasn't about bumping or this or that. It was about facial expressions, you know, and how important they are in telling the story. And that was one of the things, you know, our body language, you know about, okay, when you lock up and this guy is doing this to you, what's your body language like? And so many guys don't even understand that because, well, in part, Steve, as much as you travel around, I know you see it the same as the rest of us do, is there are guys trying to teach our business that don't even know don't understand our business, for Christ's sake.
And you know, that's the biggest thing. You know, years ago, Dusty Little told me, he said, you know what's going to kill this business is, you know, wrestling schools, because just people that aren't trained, training people, and God, he's right. Here we are, you know, 15 years later, and I'm watching it happen. It's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, there are teachers that can't teach. And you know, you must run into that too, where guys tell you, well, yeah, I've been in the business 5 years, and then you play around with them or get in a ring with them, and you think, did he say 5 minutes? Because they actually don't know. But then, you know, like I tell a lot of these young, I said, listen, I don't blame you. You didn't know anything going in, and somebody started teaching you the wrong way, and you can't know it's wrong if you've never seen right, you know? I mean, it's that's the sad part, is these kids go in thinking, yeah, I'm a wrestler, I've learned now. This guy, Joe Blow, taught me this or that, and Joe Blow doesn't know either. That's the worst thing. Are you doing any seminars yourself now?
I haven't lately. It's been a little while, just because I've been so busy, and but you know, honestly, I'd like to, because you know, we're talking about guys just not being trained, and that's been a loss. But the biggest thing to me is the respect factor, you know, for wrestling and guys before you has really gone down the toilet, so to speak. And I'm sure you see it now, you know, unless it was like that with me, and I know for sure it was like that for you, you know, as a green guy coming in. If you so much as open your mouth the wrong way, you got the crap kicked out of you, you know. And now you just got guys, first day, first match, walking around like they own the locker room, no respect. And that's the part that really drives me crazy.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. Well, and that's the, you know, the thing, as the guys like, you know, God rest his soul, Percy, when he ran a company, that was one of the things he taught, because it was one of the things that was drummed into him when he broke into business. And that's, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. And of course, a lot of these kids think, well, all I have to do is walk in the locker room, shake everybody's hand, and that makes me a wrestler.
Hell, if you're even that lucky if you're privileged enough for them to shake your hand, you know, they'll walk in the locker room, throw their bag around, and, you know, it's crazy.
Wanted to ask you real quick, because we kind of mentioned it in passing, and now that we're talking about training and seminars a little bit and the whole situation with locker rooms and what have you, you mentioned, Steve, about being in Missouri and doing some work with Harley. Can you tell everybody a little bit about the time you spent there and what you did with Harley Race?
Yeah, you know, I want to say it was 07 camp. I went down and was a part of that camp, which was a really good camp. It was probably about 60 guys. Noah was there, WWE was there looking at talent. And, you know, hey, well, not to toot my horn, but I can remember the two standouts at that camp was myself and another guy Les knows really well, Jimmy Papadon. And, you know, after the camp, I was getting advice from guys talking with Harley, and Trevor Murdoch came up to me and, you know, gave me some really good feedback. And I asked him, I was like, you know, Trevor, any advice moving forward? And he's like, you know, he said, it would do you really good to pack up and move here. And talking to him a little while, and also I came back home, and I remember telling my wife, you know, about moving to Eldon, Missouri, which, hell, she knew nothing about Eldon. We lived in kind of a small town, a little bit smaller than New Orleans, but, you know, hell, nothing compared to Eldon, Missouri. So a few months later, we decided we were going to make the move and move to Harley's, and wow, what a culture shock! Eldon, Missouri. You'd have to be there one time to know what I'm talking about, unless I know you have.
It was a cool little. Of course, he's not in Eldon now, but I always thought it was a cool little town.
Yeah. So with that said, I moved to Missouri and started training with Harley, which was great. You know, hell, I was training with the former, you know, 8-time NWA world champion, picking his brain. You know, Harley became a father to me and everybody that came through there. Him and his wife, who's passed on now, BJ, you know, great people in and out of the ring. And, you know, Harley's trainer was moving on to do different things at the time. And it was probably, I don't know, about 15 guys who had been there a lot longer than me and knew Harley's way as well. You know, he pulled me in the office one day and he's like, I need to talk to you, kid, something. And oh, God, what did I do, you know? I've only been here a short amount of time. I'm already in trouble. And he sat me down and he's like, you know, this guy that's training for me is moving on to different things and I need a trainer and I think you're the one. And I remember looking at him like, you know, Harley, I've only been here, you know, a certain amount of time, very short time. You know, I don't know your whole training style and, you know, I'm not the right one. You're the one for it, kid. And, you know, so it was like, wow, you know, Harley's telling me that he wants me to run his school, you know, and, I became his head trainer and, you know, he did so much, you know, for me. I'll never be able to pay him back. He's the reason I am who I am today, you know.
How long did you end up staying in Missouri and what were some of the things that, just a couple things that stick out in your mind that you picked up from being there?
I was there right about 2 years. You know, sad to say, I picked up my foundation again because, you know, I broke into business in 91 at a very young age. I was 14 and, the guy that broke me in, like I said, was trained by Boris Malenko. So he taught a good base. But traveling throughout those years and working with different guys, the wrong guys, I lost that. So, you know, when I went to Harley's, I found that again. I got a good base under me and it helped me so much. You know, and I got a different style because, you know, I was starting to lean more toward that, you know, doing too much, you know, doing too much crazy stuff. And Harley kind of like, you know, reeled me back in and was like, well, kid, you know, less is more, you know, let's work on this. Let's do this. Let's do that. And, you know, Les, thanks to you, it started a little bit before that when I met you at Percy's, you know, and listening to your seminars and doing the stuff with you. So, I mean, you also played a big part of that for me.
Thank you. You know, Vic, it's part of, you know, what really makes part of this so much fun is working with guys who respond, you know. And it's like when I found out that Steve had won the junior title and I sent him an email telling him congratulations, you know, and I think they picked the right guy and I knew you'll do well. To get an email back saying, well, you know, I wouldn't be here if you hadn't contributed. And, you know, that obviously doesn't buy milk or put gas in the car, but it makes you know that you're not beating your head against the wall and, you know, wasting your time. Because, you know, a lot of guys from my generation that will say, you know, what are you wasting your time with these kids for? Hell, they don't care. All they want to do is do flippy flops and stuff. But, you know, yeah. there are guys like Steve and like the crew we had in the tournament in L.A. or, you know, some of the guys that we've just talked about that still make it worthwhile, you know, that you realize
exactly.
That your time is not being wasted, that these guys want to carry on the actual art and tradition of professional wrestling.
Right. And Les, I know you haven't, and in a sense, Harley hasn't either. You wouldn't waste your time on just anybody. You know, you can find the guys that for one, have a good base, have potential, and right away talk to somebody. You'll know if you'll be able to break that barrier and get through to them. And I know you. If you can't, you'll just be like, hey, the hell with you. Hey, good luck. Do what you do. and you won't waste your time, but you'll give your time to a guy who'll accept it and work at it and do what he needs to do.
Yeah, and you become more aware of that as you become a grizzled old veteran now too, kid.
No, it's true.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
I said, because, you know, when some kid comes back and says, well, you're the world junior heavyweight champion, what did you think of my match? And when you don't blow smoke and you tell him the truth and he looks at you and says, well, I'm never going to ask this guy again. He's not telling me what I want to hear.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when I still do it because I am nowhere near, you know, as good as I want to be or as good as I should be. I always ask the right people for advice. And, you know, hey, I'm expecting to kind of get tore up and walk away a little disappointed, but, you know, I don't want you to tell me what I did right. Tell me what I did wrong so I can fix it. And honestly, people don't want to hear that. You know, they want you to say, oh, man, there was nothing. It was a great match. You know, how many times you see two guys that just had probably the worst match that you've ever seen walk back high five, and, you know, that was great. They asked nobody any advice, and they just...
Right.
They never get better, you know. Hell,
yeah.
I'll walk up to you, Les, and ask you, what did you think? And I know it's coming, and I expect it. You know, well, kid, this was bad. Why the hell did you do this? What were you thinking? You know, what the hell is wrong with you? But that's how we get better, you know. If you tell people great stuff.
Yeah, I've told some young guys that a number of years ago when Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson or the Dragon or whatever the hell you want to call him, when he was still working for ROH, they were up here in Dayton, Ohio, and I'd gone up for the show. So anyway, the show was over, and I was going around saying my goodbyes, and he was getting ready to leave, and he came by and shook hands. And the thing he said was, you saw the match. What did we do wrong? He didn't say, how good were we? He said, what did we do wrong? So he knew that there would probably be something, you know, that would be critique. But, yeah, well, you know, hell, I've been doing this 55 years, and I'm still trying to improve on what I do and how I do it. And, you know, when you stop doing that, you're done anyway, I think. That's, you know, it's when you think you're as good as you can get, then you might as well find something else to do because it's over.
Exactly. You know, Harley used to preach that so much. You know, when you think you're too good, then just go home because I can't do anything with you. You never know it all. I guarantee you, you can ask Ric Flair, and he'll tell you the same thing. You're always learning.
Steve, how do you make that assessment when you go to a show? Because now you travel around a lot more, even more than you used to. And when you look around the locker room, obviously if a guy like Les is there, you know who you're going to ask after the match. But how do you make that assessment on who the right guy is to talk to about it?
Well, when a guy opens up his bag and he pulls out a pair of gym shorts and starts putting on knee pads, I know I'm not going to that guy. But you can tell, you know, I'll watch guys put matches together and just kind of, I guess I'm in a sense, the locker room eavesdropper at times when I go to a new area. But, you know, I'm watching everything, watching guys. And it's just one of those things when you've been around long enough, you can tell, you know, and sometimes you're kind of surprised because I've been there and guys that I thought were like, man, this guy is probably terrible. I actually watch them and they're not bad. So you have a few cases that are surprising, but I don't know. For me, I've always been lucky enough that I could pick them out, you know. And of course, if there's a veteran in there, you know, that's where I'm going first, for sure.
Yeah, you could. When you know, we were talking. Someone we were talking about yesterday at training too, and people look at you like you're nuts when you tell them this. But you know, after a while, you can watch a guy walk to the ring. You can watch a guy get in. You know how he stands in the corner, and you know what to expect, what you're going to see before you see it. You know the guy is green. You know the guy is. You just know. I can't give you. A legitimate answer for that either, but you tell the way a guy carries himself, the way he acts.
Exactly.
Uh, Yeah, it comes. He's either a pro or he's one of the hobbyists who wants to tell you he's a pro. I don't
This was probably about a year ago. I was doing some WWE work and sitting talking with Regal, who I love to talk to. Just such a great guy and so such a smart guy when it comes to wrestling. But you know, Regal will never look at a guy probably above the waist whenever he's evaluating people. He's watching footwork, you know, and to me that's another thing that's lost is just the proper footwork and fundamentals. But yeah, you know, that was Regal's big thing. You know, he's watching their feet the whole time and to see how they move. So
yeah, well, you know, that's one of the reasons that I love the Triple Five to warm guys up, especially where I've never seen guys, is within that, it's less than 2 minutes to run that drill properly. And I can see athleticism, timing, conditioning, you know, agility.
Exactly.
You know, it all shows up in that one drill. And, you know, and it tells you a lot. It tells you, you know, okay, this is what I've got to work with this today or this weekend. And here's where these guys need to go. But, yeah, it's tough. Where's your next big trip to, Steve?
Next big trip, I want to say, is back up to the Dallas area, defending the NWA Junior Belt. And then, you know, of course, we talked about September, Smoky Mountain, and can't let a whole lot of details out, but the end of September, I'm back in Japan for New Japan for a big defense there. So, yeah, I definitely got some travel. There's some talk about the Portland area, bringing me into the Portland area. They've got an NWA affiliate there, so... Like you said earlier, and you were talking about, it's pretty busy for me. A lot of travel, a lot of airtime, which is kind of weird for me.
You get that frequent flyer miles, baby, and then you take your family somewhere, right?
That's right. Go on vacation for free.
Yeah, they're building up, and you know, hopefully, and I'll talk to you later about it. The Charlotte deal coming up, I'd like to make an appearance there because that's always been one of my favorite places to wrestle because of the NWA. And I haven't wrestled there yet, so definitely.
Cool.
Definitely
have you talked to Greg Price?
No, I haven't, but I'll make that a priority. Hopefully this week.
Good, good. Yeah, you. If when you call him, tell him that I'll give you a reference if he needs one.
Sure will.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. And the camp. We've got there's kids coming from all over the place. Apparently, this year is out of the country. Last year we had guys from Scotland and England and Western Canada. Well, from Western Canada too. But I think this one little girl. Now you talk about somebody wanting someone. God love her. I can't remember her name, but I was up at the Monster Factory in Jersey back last fall, and was working with this girl, and she asked me a question. I forget what it was, something about training, but I said, well, you know, you can get more experience doing this or that. And she said, well, where I'm from, that's not that easy. And I said, where's that? She said, Austria. And I said, really?
Wow.
Yeah, she had come to the States to train for a little while at Danny's place there at the Monster Factory. So then later on, Dr. Tom had done a camp in England. Or Germany, and he said, hey, he said, I train with a girl that trained with you at the Monster Factory, and I think that she is coming to Charlotte as well. Now, here is somebody, good, bad, or indifferent, that you know damn well wants to be in this business.
Exactly.
And, to
pay her own way, because you know nobody's paying it for her, you know, to pay her own way and to go to that many places, she definitely wants it.
And then we're going to have one of those weekend warriors say, I went to so-and-so's 15-minute seminar. I know everything there is to know. I don't need to go there. Right then.
Yeah.
Or it's too far.
Exactly.
It's 2 hours from their house, and it's an inconvenience for them.
I can see you open it up. We're going to get on our soapbox, both of us, because, you know, you're just so right. But you are, you know. You look at guys today, you know, like I said, they'll open up their bag, out comes, hell, if they even open up a bag, some of them come ready to go, jean shorts, camouflage jean shorts, or gym pants, knee pads, you know, don't even have the first clue about amateur wrestling, you know. That's another thing. That's what I love about the way the Japanese train, which is also kind of the way you train your guys, and Harley did too. You know, you guys had not just a good professional wrestling base, but the amateur wrestling also came into play too, you know. And God, I can't find anywhere that really teaches that here in the South at all, you know. I don't want to get on my soapbox. I don't, because I'll get you started and we'll end up doing a 4-hour show on just us bitching about stuff. So,
you know, here's the crazy thing, Vic. You wonder why I like this guy. He's young, but he's mentally old. He's an old veteran in his mind. And you know, it's when I say this, Jesus, I don't blow smoke, but It's guys like Steve that are going to keep that part of our business alive because they care about the history, because they care about wrestling. And yeah, now he does a 450 splash. He can fly with, but you know what? He also can get down and do switches and takedowns and all that sort of stuff. And, that's the whole deal, is you have to be versatile. You know, go ahead. Go ahead, Steve.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but you know, you're talking about that. And again, not to toot my own horn, but I think that's been my thing to stay around so long, is I can fly. You know, I can wrestle. If you need to punch and kick, I can do that. And you know, I've heard the question asked not too long ago, you know, I really wanted to just open hand slap the guys. Like, why do people get on the AJ Styles soapbox? Well, you know why, idiot? Because, you know, not to put myself in a category with AJ, but I mean, look at how he evolved. AJ was, you know, a guy who flew like crazy, but look at him now. AJ can still fly. He can wrestle. He can punch and kick if you need. It's those guys that to me stay around and have longevity in the wrestling business.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he used to be a spot a second guy, and mm-hmm. then he as he matured, he realized maybe my body's not going to hold up this way for very long. So now I have to refine this and take these bumps when they're necessary, not just taking them to be taking them. And I think that's the big difference too.
Yep, and exactly. And again, you know, my hat's off to him, because he was a guy, you know, with that mindset, but that was willing to listen and had some great teachers along the way. And look at him now. I mean, hell, he is phenomenal. But, you know, it's not just guys like me and you that think about the basics and stuff. I mean, Adam Pearce is another big guy, you know, who I got so much respect for. He's kind of got the same mindset as us, you know.
Yeah.
Ace Steel, you know, those guys, you know, they're still out teaching what we call old school. And hell, for some reason, people like to knock it. Oh, it's old school wrestling. No, it's basic fundamental wrestling. And without that, you know, there is no wrestling to me.
Well, you know, and like what you're saying, you know, well, I get, but you know, I look at it this way too. If the promoter's paying you well and he wants you to go out there and shake your ass and be a clown, that's what you're getting paid for, you know?
Yeah.
But the sad thing is we're also in a day and age where a huge percentage of the people that are promoting don't know anything about the business either, for Christ's sake.
Exactly. And I hate to use the word because it's overused, but yeah, you have now so many marked promoters that, you know, they're booking a show and booking guys just to see what they want to see, not to see, you know, not to book a show for what their fans want.
Yeah. Well, you know, that I think that's always kind of, you know, when people play at this, I know when I was running the tours up here in Ohio, Michigan, West Virginia, for Georgia back in 82 and 83, you know, you'd go in and talk to a prospective promotion or something, and, you know, and you realize once you talk to this guy a little while that his feedback was just basically what he remembered as a kid or what he liked as a kid. You know, like right. Some guy at the American Legion Hall said, well, yeah, you need to bring a lot of midgets in. We love those midgets. Well, as a kid, you probably did. But if we have a whole midget show, we're not going to do any business. You know, although having, you know, a midget match is not a bad thing. But these guys are looking at it through the eyes of a fan opposed to the eyes of somebody who's trying to do business and make everybody money. And
that's
yeah, go ahead. That's
that,
more.
No, I was going to say that's the key right there. You know, if you're gonna be a wrestler, promoter, whatever, that's the first thing I think you need to sit down and really think about. Okay, how am I gonna be able to make money or make a living? And that's the bottom line. Why do you get in it? You know, I had Piper chew me out one day because he asked the questions like, "Why do you do this?" And stupid me, because I love it. And he damn near like he popped me in the back of the head like, "Really? No, you do this because you want to make money." You know, that's with anything in life. Why do you go to your normal shoe job to make money? And you're right. It's the guys that are just playing Weekend Warrior and playing at it that kind of make it bad. This is a business. That's what it is. It's, you know, I'm a wrestler because I want to make money. I'm a promoter because I want to make money. You know, not because I want my 10 friends and my mom and dad to think that I'm some kind of superstar. No, it's not what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the thing, too, I think, that most of us, especially, you know, and not necessarily just from my generation, but guys like Lance Storm, Dr. Tom, who are both younger than me, say this. And, you know, like you mentioned, Nigel, you know, I when we were doing that tournament, I'd say, hey, did you see such and such on the other night? I don't watch that. I don't watch that.
Exactly.
You know, because it doesn't resonate to me as to what I want to, you know, it's not what I call professional wrestling. But, you know, that the sad thing I see now, too, is a lot of the companies are turning toward a little more comedy. And at some point, it's going to get to the point where it all becomes the same. And then it's the guy who actually wrestles is going to stand out because,
yep.
You know, well, we were talking on here last week, Steve, and Vic and I said when I saw the Dusty tribute on Monday Night Raw, the thing, it jumped off the page to me, aside from the fact that Dusty was talented and understood timing, had a great personality, and was charismatic, one of the reasons he got over in back in that day, he was the only one doing this stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And now, when you turn the TV on, okay, let's see, you want to be a wrestler, you got to have a good music, you got to have a good hand signal, you got to have a catchphrase, you got to have some kind of dance coming down the ramp and down the aisle because you just can't walk to the ring like you want to kick somebody's ass. Okay, so then you all look alike.
Exactly. And, you know, not to get on the Nigel soapbox, but I was just thinking as you were talking, Nigel got over in ROH. And think about it, he was so different because Nigel, nothing flashy about him, but his wrestling is what really, I think, brought people in. And you know, he was hard-hitting, and everything he did just looked like it was killing you. And that actually got Nigel over because, that I can remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nigel didn't do anything flashy. He didn't have no catchphrase. You know, it was just, hey, here I am, I'm a bad SOB, I'm about to take your head off.
But, you know, like I said about Dusty back then, he was the only guy that came across like that. I remember seeing him for the first time in a Greensboro Coliseum when he was, this back in the mid-70s, you know, when he started doing the Dream thing. And I'd never seen anybody get that kind of reaction coming out of the dressing room. I mean, it was just amazing.
It was just, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But now, wow. Again, yeah, he came out, you know, if he was doing a little jig or dancing, wow, that's so different. It stands out. But now everybody's got a dance routine coming off the, you know, down the ramp. So, okay.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the thing about Dusty, and I know somebody on a really popular show made the comment that Dusty was all charisma and couldn't get it done in the ring, which I'm sorry, excuse my language, is bullshit, because, you know, I can remember Harley telling me stories, you know, him and Dusty going an hour and, you know, in a wrestling match, you know. So Dusty wasn't just character. Dusty had it in the ring too, you know. I mean,
sure.
Like I said, Dusty, wow, that's all I can say. Great guy, great in the ring, great out of the ring. Just, you know, sadly missed, man. Very sad.
Yeah, well, you know, and the thing of it was, the thing that the people writing television today, or a lot of the people involved in the wrestling business who've never taken a bump, don't understand, it's not how much you do, it's doing the right thing at the right time to get the proper reaction. And, you know, and so it wasn't, you know, Dusty didn't go 100 miles an hour for 60 minutes, neither did anybody else for that matter. You know, that's the other thing that we were working on yesterday when we were at training is, you know, okay, if we need 15 minutes, you don't have to go hard for 15 minutes. You have to tell a story for 15 minutes.
Right.
And telling that story doesn't mean you have to be up in the air flipping all over the place. It means you have to, you know, any good story, whether it's you're reading a book or watching a movie or a TV series, isn't everything told in 100 miles an hour or, you know, with big physical bumps and stuff. It's, you know, there's peaks and valleys, and I think that's kind of what's missing in the business today.
Exactly. And, you know, it's, once again, like we're talking, it's knowing the area you're in, but I really believe if, you know, from Jump Street, if you got a guy that comes out, does his job, is a good heel, you have a really good baby face, and you establish that right away, you can tell your story. You know, you could have your heel be a heel, and a good baby face will get the crowd behind him, and they'll want to see, you know, that comeback. They'll want to see that baby get
right.
Justice. And once he starts, they'll come with him. But it goes from Jump Street. But as soon as you come out of that curtain, you have to be in that character, in that zone, and, you know, invest those people from get-go.
Yeah. Well, you know, I go back to Benoit for an example. Here's a guy who walked to the ring. He didn't pat everybody's hand. He didn't run for mayor. He didn't jump and jig and boogie down. But when he walked down that damn aisle, you knew one thing for sure. He was coming to kick somebody's ass. You know?
Exactly. You know, it's funny you say that. My first trip to New Japan was, you know, against Liger for the title defense. And when I got back to locker room, a lot of guys, you know, came up to me. I was like, man, it was really good. And, you know, to watch it, it wasn't nothing flashy. You know, it was me and Liger. Pretty basic match, but it flowed really well. And the people got invested in it. And, you know, Alex Shelley walks out of the locker room, shakes my hand. He's like, man, Steve, that was really good. He said, but you know what? He said, when you walked out the curtain right away, I knew you was an ass kicker. You know, and to me, that meant a lot. Because,
Shelley,
that I made a present. Great guy.
But there's a guy who, all I've seen is just spot. So, but he recognized, obviously, the difference between spot, and somebody being a wrestler. Yeah, so coming from him especially, that's a great compliment. Yeah, that's, but you know, to me, the thing of it is, you know, I know some of the guys from my generation have said, you know, when we stop teaching, it's over. But there's guys like yourself and Papadon and Timothy Thatcher and guys who, you know, are still carrying the torch. And I feel that you guys are the salvation, damn it.
No, and it's true. You know what? You can either sit there and moan and groan and bitch about, you know, why is this guy, you know, here or whatever, or you could actually do something, take the time with guys that have potential and try to help them, you know, because evidently they're going to be around, you know, so why not try to get back and make them better instead of just bitching about it? You know, get off your butt and help out. Give back.
Exactly. Exactly. How are we
gang,
doing on
believe
time,
it or not,
Vic?
I was just going to say, gang, believe it or not, we have reached the time limit.
Oh, wow.
My God. That's Steve Anthony just talked your ear off if you let him. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Guys, it's been great. It's been fun, man. You know, we just really scratched the surface. I know there's so much that you guys wanted to talk about, and I hope we didn't veer off the path too much, but it's been fun.
No, not at all. In fact, we'd be thrilled to have you back sometime in the relatively near future to talk about how the whole thing with being the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion is going, because I'm sure you're going to be holding on to that belt for a good long while and all of the other things that you're going to be working on. And before we say goodbye for now, Steve, I want to give you an opportunity to plug anything it is that you'd like to plug, whether it's how people can get in touch with you on social media, upcoming matches and towns, and how promoters can get a hold of you if they want the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion on their show.
Well, you can check me out on Facebook under Steve Anthony. Or you can email me at fako450@att.net. I look forward to hearing from you guys, and just watch. We got some big things coming up. Like I said, I won't go into detail, but I am back in New Japan in September, so it should be pretty interesting for the exclamation point, Steve Anthony, here in the next few months.
Cool. I mean, you know what? It's you're one of my kids, and I love you. It's guys like you that make it still fun for me, and I'm honored to be a part of what you do, and I'm proud of you as a champion, and I know you wear that belt. You know, I had two tag team partners that wore that damn belt, Nelson Royal and Roger Kirby. So I've trained a lot of the damn junior heavyweight champions.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That belt means so much to me because of the heritage, you know, and it's still around. Hell, probably one of the oldest junior belts there is, if not the oldest.
And I've had to, and come to think of it, I did wrestle both those guys too, but I've also wrestled Hodge and Matsuda, and who the hell else? Kenny Mantell.
Yeah, Agbar held it, I think, for a short while. You know, I want to say Mike DiBiase probably. It's been many a legend that held that title for sure.
So anyway, Steve, the best of luck to you, my friend. Thank you for coming on with us.
Well, thank you, guys.
And, no, I love you, brother, and you be safe. I hope you get to Charlotte. Would love to see you and spend some time. And, you know, I'm still doing weekend camps. If you got anybody down there that actually needs anything, maybe you and I can get together for a weekend sometime and show them a few things.
Oh, God, I'll send you busloads. A lot of people need a lot of help, so but thank you, guys.
Thank you, Steve. Love you, man.
All right, love you, Les. Bye-bye.
That's our guest, the World Junior Heavyweight Champion for the National Wrestling Alliance, Steve Anthony. Really enjoyed listening to you guys swap some stories and talk about what's going on these days, Les. And the reason I didn't wrap the show right then and there is because I wanted to know if you wanted to do a little overtime as it relates to perhaps discussing a little Cora Combs and Buddy Landell before we wrap this
up.
Yeah,
I think we should. Yeah, we lost two crazy people, amazing people. This past week, Cora, my God, she was one of the original Billy Wolf girls. I'm so happy I got to see her 2 years ago at Scott Peel's Tennessee Legends reunion that he has in September. Cora, just a doll baby. I mean, she had an amazing sense of humor. She was a hell of a worker. You know, it didn't matter. If we were going to a town where they were expecting 100 people, or we were going to the Memphis Coliseum or Birmingham Auditorium or you know, any of the big arenas, Cora always dressed classy. She always came across as a classy lady. But in the locker room, she was one of the boys. Like I say, had a great sense of humor. I know I was telling somebody the other day, Ronnie West, who's left us now too, and I guess Cora will probably be ribbing the hell out of him up in heaven. When he first started refereeing, and he was just a young guy, and of course, but I remember I was there when the first time Cora ever worked with him, and she got to ribbon him in the locker room. Of course, they had no plans of doing this, but they just wanted to frustrate him and aggravate him, and she kept saying, "Now, Ronnie, when we pull your pants down in the middle of the ring," and he'd look and say, oh, my God. And, of course, he was expecting that to happen. And, of course, it never did. But Cora was just a great lady. I've known her for so long. Debbie, her daughter, who is a dear friend, too. I've known Debbie was like 8 or 9 years old when Cora and I first worked the National Territory together. And Debbie was going to be my girlfriend when she grew up. But, of course, then she had other plans, what can I say? But, yeah, they're both great people. And, wow, you know, it was really a shock. Although, you know, at 92, Cora had a hell of a life, and she was a special lady. And Buddy Landell, well, wow. Talk about a crazy man. You know, he's so talented, and by his own admission, I know a lot of people posted the interviews from when he was going to work with Shawn Michaels at, what do we call it, the Super Bowl of Wrestling or the World Series at the last big show that we had in Smoky Mountain. And, you know, it's, you know, it depended on which Buddy you saw. The Buddy was hooked on all sorts of chemicals and could be the biggest jerk in the world. And the guy who was straight with a great smile and, you know, could go in the ring and have a hell of a match. And just, you didn't know which guy you were going to see, you know. But, you know, he checked himself out of the hospital. And you realize if you knew Buddy, that was so in character. You know, the fact that the doctors probably said, don't leave. And he said, I'm going on home. You know, he marched to his own drum for 53 years and, left us marching to his own drum, I guess is the best way to say it. You know, and our community has lost a lot of people in the last few weeks, and, let's hope that comes to an end. I'm honestly, the tear ducts are tired and you know, this is, like I say, with Cora, traveling with her was an education. Trying to straighten Buddy out sometimes was an education. But they were part of my extended family, and I miss them both.
Brother, this has been a hell of a month for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah. Yes, it has. Yes, it has. And, of course, as of Tuesday, we are 30 days away from Charlotte.
That's right.
And, man, we're going to have a great time. And, you know, it's going to be the last one, and Jesus, I hate that, that it is, but it is, so, you know, but it's, if you haven't lined, if you aren't coming, then, wow, you don't know what you're missing. There's so much going on. Thursday, you know, the opening day, we've got training start at 7 a.m., with the trainees all morning, then break for lunch. We got, Q&A in the afternoon. That's the first day of training. Then that night is the premiere of the Mid-Atlantic Memories documentary. And if you attend that, everybody gets a souvenir DVD of the show. Jim Ross narrates it. I think I've got a few sentences on this thing, as there's so many guys they're talking to and are being a part of this. And then that night, the Jim Ross Experience, or the Jim Ross, the one-man show, and then a bunch of us are going to be on the Cornette Experience live, and that's all Thursday. We haven't even got to Friday, Saturday, or Sunday yet. So it's and a lot of new faces there that I haven't. You know what I want is if I work it out, I want a picture of Lance Russell, Bob Connell, Jim Ross, and myself. I've worked with all three of those guys on wrestling television over the years, and I'd love to have, and I haven't seen Lance in like forever, so I'm really looking forward to that too. So it's going to be a hell of a 4 days that I can say, Vic.
That it absolutely will. Yeah, Lance Russell was just added officially in the last week or so. Really looking forward to having a chance to hearing Lance Russell. I mean, live and in person, that's a gem anytime. When you've got a guy with his level of experience and the things he's seen, and he's going to be spending some time with us here in Charlotte over the course of that weekend. I can't wait for that. That may end up being my personal highlight.
I figured you probably would end up out by the pool with SoCal Val and Angelina Love.
I'm only going to be out there but for so long before they get rid of me. So, you know.
But But it is a great time. And if you are, you've heard us talking earlier, if you've never listened to us before, if you are an independent wrestler, you might want to sign up for the 4-day training camp, with a few fly-by-night trainers like Lance Storm, Nigel McGuinness, Gerald Briscoe, myself, Dr. Tom Pritchard, Rip Rogers, to name a few. You know, and as I said, we got guys coming from all over the country, all over the world, for this training session. We've got guys coming back for the second and third year, who found it so beneficial to them the first time that they don't miss any. To the trainee that's voted by the trainers as the most improved over the 4 days, we'll receive a $2,500 Reed Flair scholarship. Plus, I'm sure they're going to have auction belts. Reggie Parks and company always come up with a beautiful belt at Hall of Heroes on Friday night, matches Saturday night, Sunday afternoon. So, hell, there's something going on all the time, right, Vic?
Absolutely. It's nonstop action, wall-to-wall for 4 days straight, as is testament by the fact that you actually never sleep the entire 4 days.
Yes. Ain't that the truth?
That's just the fact.
The thing that's going to give me some sleep this year is the wife's going to be with me. She was, still rehabbing from the knee surgery last year, so she didn't get to go to Charlotte with me. So I might have to behave myself this year. So,
no.
Lance, if you're listening, I won't try to drag you out in the middle of the night and get your old ass wore out. But it's a ball. I'm looking forward to it. I really am. I am so geared up for this and ready to go. And I know you are, too.
I am. And while we're on the whole subject of getting down there and just doing camps in general, you're, as you mentioned, Steve, you're also available for weekend camps and what have you. So where can folks get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can reach me, Les@EPWT.com or LesThatcher@Zoomtown.com. I'm running training camp here 3 times a week in Hamilton, Ohio at the Christian Wrestling Association's warehouse there. You can reach me at those emails. The guy's helping me. BJ Whitmer, who started in this business with me, who is also now as a star on Ring of Honor, he's coming in to help out. Tarek Puska, Tarek the Great, who was one of the first trainees I ever had, is also involved, and we're doing we've got plenty of room for plenty more, if they want to join us here. But yeah, you can reach me. I do weekend training camps, and I need to work, so please call me or touch base with me. So you can reach me, Les@EPWT.com, LesThatcher@Zoomtown.com, and I am open. I know I'm going back to Deep Southern Championship Wrestling this year and Smoky Mountain and the Monster Factory, to name a few, and hopefully I'm on some other people's list of to-dos as well.
I know, Les, you mentioned a few minutes ago when we were starting to talk about Charlotte, if you've never heard this before, and that possibility absolutely exists today. You may be listening to this show for the first time. If so, thank you. And that's more than likely because this show is absolutely free. It's not just for the subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com today. And we would encourage you wholeheartedly to take this link and post it anywhere you want to help us spread the word about WrestlingObserver.com. If you've enjoyed this show, there's so many more that are like it, and then so many more that are completely different from this one. We have 12 to 15 different radio shows or podcasts, however you choose to view it, over the course of each and every week. No less than 3 feature the great Dave Meltzer, who has been in business for so many years as the writer of the Wrestling Observer newsletter. He does audio 3 times a week, and of course you've got Super Chico, Brian Alvarez, doing lots of audio day in and day out. In fact, he does multiple shows each and every day, so that 12 to 15 number may be conservative at this point because he stepped his schedule up. There's over 6,000 hours of audio shows in the WrestlingObserver.com archives, not to mention the fact that you also get access to both newsletters, Figure Four Weekly and the preeminent wrestling newsletter for over 30 years, the Wrestling Observer newsletter. And it's all available for really a bag of shells, to be honest with you, depending on how long you decide to sign up for. They're as low as $9.99 a month, the subscriptions at WrestlingObserver.com. So if you like what you heard today, we'd love for you to stop by the website, check it out, and if it's for you, sign up with us, because we'd love to have you on a regular basis. Les, that's pretty much going to wrap it up for us this week, my friend.
Right. We're going to try and have Dr. Tom and Lance Storm back on the show before we head to Charlotte for that weekend as well. So stay tuned.
That's right. Fun stuff definitely going to be happening over the month of July. And we'll get a chance to talk about, well, I won't do it until next week because that'll be more appropriate. But we'll be back in business at our normal time next week, and we'll be talking about Les and his very first foray into the professional wrestling ring as a pro.
We will, huh? Okay.
Yeah, we will. About that
time.
Right.
If Les can remember back that far, right?
Well, there you go. Tune in to find out if Les can remember his first match.
Yeah, exactly. Tune in to see if Les's memory is still with him this time next week.
We'll have that. And I know that there are some folks who sent in questions this week. I did not forget about them. I do have them. We'll get to that mailbag next week, I promise. And if you have any questions you want to send to next week's show, send it to me on the Twitter machine at VS1067. Or if you are a subscriber, just go on ahead into our thread on the message board and post your questions there. I will be taking care of anything you ask this week with Les next week. So with that said, we're wrapping up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. He is the legend, Les Thatcher, who's going to be taking plenty of Alpha Brain that Steve Austin plugged. So his memory is going to be solid next week. I'm Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your week or weekend to listen to us here at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. And we'll talk to you again next week.